Hi, I'm Doug Keck, and welcome to the Catholic Sphere. Each week, we tackle topics important to Catholics around the globe with a different host and a different focus. Now, this week, our subject is theology and the topic, order in the church, love or charity, which gets priority? Today, we are joined by EWTN TV and radio host, the ever-popular Father Mitch Pacwa, an institution here at EWTN. He's with us from our Scripture and Tradition set right here in Irondale, Alabama. We also have moral theologian, author, papal missionary of mercy, and EWTN host, Father Jeffrey Kirby. He joins us from South Carolina. And finally, we're joined, as always, by my confrere, EWTN's Vice President of Theology, Colin Donovan. He is in our theology studio. Welcome, gentlemen. Thank you so much for finding time to be here on the Catholic Sphere.
Glad to be here. With you.
Right. So our topic today, as we talked about the idea of Ordo Amoris, and it came up as kind of a new concept to a lot of us, certainly as lay people, when J.D. Vance brought it up as a point in a couple of interviews, as kind of a follow-up to a statement that had come out of Rome from the Holy Father having to do with immigration and a Catholic perspective on how do we balance the right of states to have borders, so to speak, and also the right of people to be able to welcome those strangers. And we'll talk about that as well in the second show. But let's first talk, Father Kirby, about that whole idea. What exactly is this Ordo Amoris that many of us aren't familiar with?
Yes, yes. So first of all, I was so glad when the president referenced this, because if you believe it, Doug, half of my graduate thesis in philosophy was actually on the Ordo Amoris. So I was like, yes, this is perfect. First, that it's being spoken about, and secondly, that a Catholic politician is actually going to welcome principles of Catholic social doctrine into public discourse. So this was a huge step forward, really an example of really what Catholic politicians should be doing. In terms of the Ordo Amoris, this was first referenced by St. Augustine, just basically is the order of love that we are called to give. So we are called to love all people. We are to have this generic love that desires the salvation of all men and women. But then what exactly does that look like? So if I'm called to love everyone, okay, but how do I do that? And St. Augustine, drawing from the scriptures, especially in the writings of St. Paul, he talks about the order amore. So first we love God, then we are called to, you know, if those who are married, to love spouses, and then their children, their family, and then their specific neighborhood, their local neighbors. And basically these series of influences, series of relationships that help us to order the call to love. Mm-hmm. So for example, it would be so offensive if a husband and father were to feed the next door neighbor but not feed his own children. So obviously there has to be a certain order. There's a sequence to our call to love. And so in that way, Augustine gives us this principle. It's later developed by St. Thomas Aquinas. And Aquinas adds a whole new perspective to it by adding order of charity. Mm-hmm. Because Aquinas wants to address, well, what about those who are in extreme necessity? For example, Samaritan. Well, what about those? Like, that doesn't seem to fit as well in Augustine's concept. And so Aquinas is building on Augustine, mm-hmm. but he just says there are times when there is a need that regardless of relationships, we have to provide help.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. Father Mitch, let me ask you, you know, I certainly, in my limited experience when we were in marriage encounter, one of the things, and certainly Bishop Sheen always talked about, that you needed as a couple to put God at the center of your marriage, and it kind of all comes out from there, you know, mm-hmm. your spouse, and then your children, and then your extended family, etc. So it kind of fits, in a sense, this outward ripple effect, concentric circles going outward from the family. So how do we balance that with that need inside the church for us to deal with people in need?
Yeah, this is a couple things that certainly when you start off with the question of loving God first, something that oftentimes is missing in the starting point for a lot of people, that God's love gives a perspective. I mean, it's interesting how you begin with the infinite, that which is beyond everything, and you do so with an act of faith mm-hmm. that God also infinitely loves everybody else, but he gives me perspective in regard to whom I have proper responsibilities for. Mm-hmm. There are, with responsibility always comes obligation. And this perspective helps us to see that we love our, if you're married, you love your spouse first, mm-hmm. and then your children. You have this order, and then you go back further out. We start with the infinite, go to the very specific persons, mm-hmm. and then move to ever wider circles, mm-hmm. in order to have, the proper way I can use my talents, my gifts, my resources, mm-hmm. to love the people to whom God sends me. And this is going to be part of the discernment, mm-hmm. where I can, and we'll talk more about the role of charity, mm-hmm. but it's not only just fulfilling a duty, which philosophy might require of us, but it is also going beyond that to giving of myself, mm-hmm. to those different people properly in my sphere of influence. And this is a process of learning how to keep balance.
Also, Father Mitch, isn't it sometimes, and maybe this isn't directly related, but sometimes as people say, it's a lot easier to help people at a distance than to help those right in front of you.
100%. Because you are not only helping people, but you are interacting, and the people closest to oneself know us better than the people possibly can when they are at a great distance. Mm-hmm. I can love an abstraction. Oftentimes, right. I will do things out of love for a certain ideology or an idea or an ideal, mm-hmm. rather than loving concrete individuals. Whereas, when you have a 3-year-old right in front of you, or a 14 or 15-year-old right in front of you, the challenges to love somebody who challenges everything you do and say become more difficult than it is to love the 3-year-olds in general way out there.
Right. Let me ask you, Colin, as a husband and father, and even kind of extrapolating that out to, let's say, the bishop with the idea, or the shepherd with his sheep, is the number one priority of the shepherd, you would think first, is to make sure his own sheep are taken care of. And though he is concerned about those other sheep that maybe need help, he has to make sure that his sheep are taken care of. He can't open up the gate and go wandering around trying to get the other sheep and then putting his own sheep at risk, right?
Well, I think yes and no, because on the one hand, he also has to be prepared to go out and find the lost sheep. And so that would be the special case of charity. I think Father Kirby alluded...
But he wouldn't leave the gate open for his own sheep to get out, right?
No, I think he's assuming there's a coherence there. They're going to stay together, right. But I'm going to go get the stray that's wandered
Absolutely.
Off.
Absolutely.
You know, that kind of thing. But Father Kirby alluded to something St. Thomas talks about in explaining this. And that is that, you know, in the description of love from Augustine, and you can even go back to Aristotle and Plato, where they speak about giving to each person their due, that this is a kind of justice that is owed to each one because of their human nature. The Christian faith gives a higher perspective of that. Because as Augustine and Aquinas explain it, they say, give them their due in relationship to God, that we're all destined to God. It recognizes that God is the author of our human nature, that God imbues our human nature with the desire to fulfill certain rights and obligations. Even our American Declaration of Independence speaks about the rights that comes from our created nature. But Aquinas goes on from that, from this idea of sort of the natural love that comes from our nature, to the idea of God and his beneficence, that love is always is overpouring and outflowing. So the preparedness that each one ought to have, even though we have this obligation within the order Amoris to take care of those to whom we have the responsibility and a closeness of various kinds, whether it's familial or civic or ecclesial or political or whatever it is, then in addition to that, there are occasions where God brings into our life the opportunities. You could say, in his providence, he puts the stranger before us. And in those cases, we, using the idea of God's beneficence, it is a way in which he is asking us to take care of them. And I think that has to be brought into this too. And so from that point of view, you could say, yes, everything that the vice president said was true, but it left out some significant aspects that have to be considered, not in contradiction to each other, but seamlessly with the other as part of the whole, you know, both philosophical, theological, and faith understanding of the church.
Right. Classic Catholic both-and kind of situation.
Exactly, yeah. Integrated together.
Right. Let me ask you, Father Kirby, because one of the things, too, we're dealing with when we're dealing with these recent issues come out of something that's quite large and kind of nationwide kind of a situation. But yet we deal in a church where many times we talk about subsidiarity, the idea that things are supposed to be done the closest to the people you're dealing with. So the question is this the kind of thing a big government organization donating money to another large organization is the best way to deal this? Or what about the local parishes, the local churches and those outreaches? Is that really the way that the church is supposed to be reaching out to people in need?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I think really as Catholics, we have to regain this whole notion of subsidiarity. And I know oftentimes when people hear that word, they can be caught off guard. It's one of those big, six-syllable words, but it's actually a really important word because subsidiarity is basically the ordo mores that we're speaking about, that there are these spheres of responsibility, spheres of duty that we have according to our vocations, according to God's providence. Mm-hmm. And so the subsidiarity is definitely not only the Christian way, but really the way of a healthy society that it's understood, first it's one's obligation to God and then to their immediate people, so dependent, a wife or children. Mm-hmm. And then these movements, these spheres that then begin to move on. And the reason why this is important is for actually many reasons. You don't want large institutions or corporations or government basically usurping the local family or local community. So that's, of course, we don't want overreach. But also is we don't fully understand community and first know family. So what can we give to a community if we don't have that concept of family, if we're not living family? And what happens when you don't build from one to the other things become very artificial. So mm-hmm. then you have this peculiarity we were speaking about of people who love humanity, but they have the human being in front of them, right? So the Russian novelist Dostoevsky, he says, we have these people who love humanity, but they can't stand the guy next to them who has bad breath, right? Mm-hmm. So the concrete becomes testable because everything becomes this abstract. Mm-hmm. But that only happens when you remove subsidiarity. And, oftentimes we balance subsidiarity with solidarity. And everyone wants to talk about solidarity, and that's good because it's also a very important principle. Solidarity is our call as Christians, as human beings, children mm-hmm. of God, to love everyone. But we have to have subsidiarity. I always like to point out to people, if you have solidarity without subsidiarity, you become a socialist. And just like if you have subsidiarity mm-hmm. without solidarity, you become a fascist. Now, what's interesting about that is you look at the U.S. Bishop's website on social teachings. While they talk about the four principles of Catholic social doctrine, so dignity, common good, solidarity, and subsidiarity, when you go to emphasize the seven themes of Catholic social teaching, mm-hmm. subsidiarity gets lost. And I think that reflects in how certain bishops approach things, how some of our national approaches to things are affected, because if you remove subsidiarity, mm-hmm. well, solidarity can get crazy. So you have to have this understanding of spheres of responsibility, spheres of influence. I would be very cautious of the person who wants to talk about community but does not first understand family.
Right. Right. So, Father Mitch, let me ask you, one of the insights I remember talking to you about, I remember it was based more on the idea of the, as Father Groeschel used to talk about, the soggy fish sandwich, the idea of the loaves and the fishes, the sharing, and you made the point that sharing was so natural for those people at that time, and reaching out to help people and welcoming the stranger, let's say. So the question would be, when you say welcoming the stranger, and we'll talk a little bit about it later as well, I mean, what does that actually mean? Does that, you know, helping the person who obviously on the road who got robbed? What if you were with your family and your family was there and you had concerns that the robbers were still there? What would be your priority?
Yeah, there are a couple things you have to keep in mind. You know, in a world where not everybody is benign, we have to deal with the flat-out reality that there are a lot of people who are also making choices to be bad and will use, say, the desire of another person to help a person in need as a way to make advantage to themselves. And you have to be alert to that, because you do have an obligation to protect those who are vulnerable to that. And when you, let's take a look at this principle in some concrete way. Back in the 70s, I read a book by an organization called Bread for the World. And this supports what Father Kirby was talking about. They said that when governments are in charge of taking care of social programs, the two dominant costs are waste and corruption. That this is normal, and we have to protect against both. Now, not all waste can be avoided. It's hard to buy food from the store without there having been a good deal of waste. That's something that you have to deal with to the best of your prudent ability. But guarding against corruption, which goes in a number of directions, usually in the form of using acts of charity for one's own purposes to get political power, or more likely, to use the actions to take care of the needy to make a lot of money off of them so that they get a cut, but not as big a cut as the distributor. This is something that dominates, in especially in a lot of other countries, but it is also very present in this country at all levels of government, as I've been observing increasingly. The other thing with that is that in the same report, they mentioned that 90% of the resources that are dedicated to the poor and go through churches get to the poor.
Right.
As opposed to the government, where the percentage really goes down. Even in our welfare system, it might be 40% of the money allocated for welfare programs actually gets to the people in need of welfare. I think it's right now even lower with Medicare. You know,
that's what they're finding out with the DOGE kind of looking
exactly
into this plethora of NGOs that are out there.
And this would be an example of where, just as the man stopping to help someone who's been beat up has to also be very alert to protecting his family from the possible presence of the thieves to make sure they are not harmed. Also, when we are dealing with governments or non-governmental organizations, NGOs, we have to make sure that we are protecting those who are going to receive the beneficence, the good work, the money, the food, the medicine, etc. We want to make sure that we are also alert to protecting from the corruption, the greed, and the political manipulation. This is another aspect of our Christian charity and prudence.
Let me ask you, Colin, as our theologian here, we talk about charity and then we talk about taxes, and I wonder how those intersect. I mean, if the government taxes people, which is basically, you could argue against their will at some level, though there is some sort of agreement there, so to speak, as being a citizen, and then decides to give that money to even a Catholic organization to help other people, is that charity? And also, I think with some of the information that's come out recently, maybe people really weren't aware, they were thinking, let's say, the Catholic Charities is basically funded by the Catholics' collections, or the Catholic Relief Services is mostly funded by the, you know, Catholic Relief Services collection kind of a thing, and without realizing so much money comes from the government. And the question always is, you don't want people to sing for their supper, as they used to say, but with many of these situations, when the money is involved like this, these organizations, in attempt to do great work, also have to kind of put their Catholicism or their faith kind of on the back burner, no?
Well, they certainly do, and historically we've seen that even in this country, where you, if you wish to participate in government programs, whether in states or even nationally, you have to comply with the regulations. And the debate in a past administration over Catholic Church having to refer immigrant women, migrant women, to get abortions and this kind of thing. So yeah, it can bend, it can attempt to bend the church to its will. The trouble is, at surface, on the surface, it looks as if a big institution is better equipped to collect, distribute large, you know, amounts of money or large amounts of goods and subsidies and things that are needed, and that has a certain logic to it. But the difference is, governments, although they have the authority, the church has always recognized the authority to government, you know, based on Christ, you know, render to Caesar what is Caesar's, what to God what is God. But such organizations, they can't have charity. They can't, as Father Kirby put it, understand the nature of community, because they understand the family or they understand the parish. So superficially, it looks like that's a good solution, to get taxpayer money to, you know, to run a large national, you know, charitable organization. But I think in the end, it falls on many points, including the religious freedom point, including the point of, you know, how do we efficiently distribute charity in the sense of the act of love, the act of giving, as simply here's money, here's clothing, here's diapers, or whatever. Those are all necessary, but it needs to be an act of God's beneficence and not the anonymous state.
Okay, very good. So, Father Kirby, as we're getting near the end, maybe you could wrap us up with the idea of what should our audience understand about Ordo Amoris and fitting into a proper balance between that charity, et cetera, and what we're dealing with, let's say, in the States right now.
Yes, I would say, as Catholic Christians, one of the things that we can take away from this whole conversation on the Ordo Amoris is really the utter importance of our nation. So where has God placed us in his vineyard? What responsibility has God given to us? So for myself as a priest, or for others to be called as husband and father, father, I'll be called to be single, or to the religious life. What is our vocation? And to understand that the understanding we have as Catholics in terms of our responsibility, even to fulfill the call to love, is placed within vocation. So this subsidiarity, this order of love that we're given, flows from that vocation. So I would encourage every Catholic Christian to really go back and to deepen in their understanding, their call, the graces of their own vocation, because that's where the church goes. And in terms of how do we love, how do we fulfill the command of the Lord to love others, it's all there with our vocation. So again, I want to stress, it starts there. And I think that's a huge takeaway for us believers, is this is the vocation we've been given is the heart of how we are called to live and how we're called to love.
Right. Since you were so quick and succinct, I'd give you, Father Mitch, a minute for you to wrap up.
I would just add that, as we had talked at the beginning, that we begin with the love of God first. And we need to remember that he loves each one of us infinitely. It's the only way God knows how to love. He doesn't live in it. It's infinite. But he also loves a lot of unlovely people infinitely as well. And we have to ask then is, how do you want me to serve them, Lord? What is it you are asking of me in terms of sharing in your infinite love for those that I can possibly be of service to? And in this way, fulfill the love that you have for me first, and then share that with others. In that way, we fulfill the two great commandments: to love God with whole heart, mind, and soul, and neighbor as oneself.
Okay, very good. Well, we'll have to leave it there. And I'd like to thank my panel. Of course, we have Father Mitch, and of course, Father Kirby joining us remotely, and Colin Donovan Azzoli for being with us today. And again, we always thank you for joining us on this program. Don't forget to join us next week when the host is Ryan Penny, a young man. He'll be discussing Catholics on social media. Very interesting material. That's right here on the Catholic Sphere. We'll see you next time.